Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, and welcome to the latest episode of Biblioscapes in Discussion. Today, I have the great pleasure being joined by photographer Eugene Schlumberger. Maybe I've pronounced that wrong. My apologies, but good evening, Eugene, and welcome to the podcast.
Good evening, Ewan. Lovely to be here.
Thank you very much for your time. So before we get into talking about your recent book, E66, which the subject matter is maybe given away in the title, it would be great if you could give an introduction to your photographic journey and background, Eugene.
So I did a little bit of photography as a teenager, and then I stopped, and then I started again around the age of 20, 21, because I was sharing a house with a friend who was really into photography, and then
Cool.
I stopped again, and I then picked it up again about 10 years ago. Our marriage had ended, and it was a way of sort of just focusing my mind somewhere else, really, and forcing me to get out. And so it really started as a kind of, I don't know, self-help, for want of a better word. It got me out of the house, gave me a focus, got me doing exercise. And so it's only really the last 10 years that I've started to take it increasingly sort of seriously, and it's taken up more of my time. Really recently had to retire, so I've now got as much time as I want, really, to pursue it and hopefully take it in lots of different directions. I don't have any training, any formal training. I don't even have GCSE art. I was banned from taking it by my art teacher because I can't draw. So I don't have any formal background. It's sort of something I've just picked up and sort of developed as I've gone along.
Yep, cool. And is it largely landscape, or are you a mix of documentary, or are there other styles and other interests that kind of take your fancy?
I would say it's mainly landscape. I actually started, when I started again about 10 years ago, I started doing quite a bit of street photography. And then for reasons I've never really been able to pinpoint, people started to disappear from the pictures, and it just became more and more the landscape.
Yep.
There are some sort of documentary elements, and some projects I'd like to do in the future will be perhaps a little bit more documentary. But yeah, I would say mostly it's been landscape so far.
Yeah. So, and obviously your recent book, E66, the title kind of gives away what the subject matter is, which is the road that many of us know, crossing from west to east or east to west, depending on what way you're coming, across Northern England, in terms of the pass from Newcastle over towards the Lake District. So where did kind of the idea come to begin photographing that, even before it became a book? What kind of spurred you into photographing that particular landscape?
Well, it actually starts on Teesside, not Newcastle.
Oh, sorry, Teesside,
that's okay. I lived on, until last year, I lived on Teesside. So I spent a lot of time around the A66. There's a lot of the area around the A66 on Teesside is very much the kind of landscape that I'm interested in photographing. Yep. So I kind of developed, unwittingly really, a body of work that would go into this book. I then came across the Paul Graham A1 book, which absolutely beautiful book and collection of images. And it struck me that he'd worked from south to north, north to south, along that sort of spine of the country. And that I could, with the A66, take it across east to west. But the other thing that really appealed to me was the massive difference in the landscape from one end to the other, you know, starting off in Teesside, the post-industrial landscape, and then across past Scotch Corner, when, as I've described it in the book, really, the landscape sort of thins out. It's not as crowded up to the road. And you end up in the Lake District, where you've got world-class scenery, really, and the contrast of that really interested me. And that's when it sort of formulated into a plan to make a proper effort to travel the route several times, photographing it and explore that.
Yeah, because I know all the photographs have kind of been photographed within walking distance from the edge of the road. So was a bit of research involved in terms of plant driving back and forth, or was it just hitting the road a couple of times, seeing what took an interest, and then kind of working back through the scenes at maybe different times of the year?
A bit of both, really. Often it was just drive somewhere, park up, and have a look around. Initially, I found it quite tough because initially I felt obliged to, I don't know, I felt almost like I tried to push away from my usual style of photography, and I wasn't really happy with what I was getting. I was trying to approach it more as a traditional landscape photographer, where often I work, I would say I'm landscape, but I'm more close up with what I'm looking at. And so, yeah, I was finding I was going to places, photographing it, coming home and thinking it's not really catching what I want to do. And it took a while really to almost have the confidence to think, no, I'm going to photograph this as me, not as what I think a photographer should be doing with it. And I found the best way of doing it, although there is some sort of looking at Street View and Google Earth and planning it. For me, the best way to do that is just get to a location and sort of thoroughly wander around and see things from different angles and then see what catches my eye, really.
I think it's a lovely body of work. I love the contrast between East and West, and that it's kind of so many of like the everyday scenes, particularly some of the winter shots with the gates and the snow. I think they just work lovely. It's like it's the bold, big bold colours. They remind me a bit of some of the work Ian Sargent's done in some of his books, in terms of the ordinary, some of the day to day mundane scenes that actually everyone just passes by. But it kind of, as you say, it documents from your eye this one route.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm very flattered that you say it reminds you of Ian's work, because I love Ian's work. But yeah, colour is a big thing for me, really. Again, originally I started out and I was producing monochrome as well, but when the people disappeared, the black and white disappeared as well, really.
Right.
And I think spending a lot of time on industrial areas, there's a drabness to it, but then when you find the colour in there, it's often, I think, really beautiful. It's maybe faded. There's a patina on, you know, where you've got that paint, and yeah. So colour is a big sort of driver for me.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I think, as you say, it's also the bold and the size and the shapes on the industrial aspect of it, which is maybe the big containers or some big signage or the big metal steel doors, etc. That's why you just see them in nice bold colours, and it really stands out against what can be otherwise a very like bland landscape. Is maybe a bit harsh, but it's those things kind of, it's the colours and the shapes that kind of just pop out at you.
Yeah, it is. And really, you know, most of that landscape is extremely functional in its design. Yeah. And yet somehow, occasionally, you get these pockets of accidental beauty, really, you know, that where that colour pops out. But maybe that colour's been there for 30 or 40 years, so it's got a nicer texture and feel to it than something that's been freshly painted.
Yeah, and then just looking towards the end of the journey, it's lovely to see maybe the more quaintness of the lakes, and just, I suppose, some, it feels a bit more oldy worldy type, some type of the scenes in terms of just the housing a bit more domesticated, and yeah, just a softness to it that you don't get on the other side of the country.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, you know, you don't have to stray too far from it on Teesside to get to some very different landscapes. But yeah, the general feel of the road at one end, and then contrasting that with the Teesside where I lived, it is very, very different and much more gentle and quiet, much quieter images, I think, at the back of the book.
Absolutely. And how did you kind of approach it? Because I know everything's obviously the same ratio. Was that something that you kind of set out at the beginning, or was that something that you decided on later on? So it all really fits nicely together as a lovely compact body of work.
That came together in the edit, really. As you can imagine, there's a huge amount of stuff that didn't make the cut, and I tried different ratios. I'm quite fond of a square image, and I had those in originally and then took them out, and then I had some and tried some portrait as well, orientation, but it just felt that the whole thing should be, I don't know, I think it's the linear nature of the actual road. I wanted the book to almost, it just feels like everything is standard in it.
Yeah.
So yeah, so in the end, it was those images that made the cut, and different ratios and different orientations
And I suppose you've got, it's such a long journey. I'm sure you must have taken so many images, and as you say, a lot didn't make the cut. How did you kind of approach the sequencing? Because I'm sure it'd probably be very easy to find a lot more images from one area. And I know you mentioned in the book that, yeah, there's maybe a bit more in the industrial where there's a little bit more activity, which is obviously a very conscious decision. And how did you kind of approach that in terms of what was the balance you were looking for, or the narrative you were looking to tell, and I suppose the key areas you were wanting to focus on?
The first thing I did with the sequencing was I decided to have it geographically sequenced.
Yep.
So every picture, well, not 100% geographical, but my Middlesbrough pictures are grouped together, my Stockton pictures, etc., grouped together. And within that, I was then able to sort of play a bit with spreads and seeing which I felt worked better there. As for the sort of fact that it feels to me that it's, and actually it isn't when you go through it, but I think that because the Teesside area geographically is a small section of the road, there is more proportionally in there. I think ultimately it just felt that those images needed to be in there, that those images then sort of fed into what came later in the book. Again, I tried different balances, but the sort of quieter end of the road, as I've put it, I just felt that the images I had there could be quite repetitive because the landscape didn't change so much. And I think it risked, I don't know, it risked becoming, it risked having images that really weren't strong enough as landscape photographs to be in there, just to try and balance out the spread of it. And in the end, I decided that really the Teesside part of it needed to be featured more heavily. It just felt.
I personally, I think the balance actually works really nicely. I don't, it, for me, it doesn't feel as though there's an overload of one particular area than another and another, because I think you've got, there's, for me, there's quite the heavy industrial feel to begin with, but then actually I think it tapers off quite a bit in the middle, which is maybe still the partial end of that side, but actually it could probably be quite a bit of the middle part of the journey. And I think actually quite nicely at the end, it kind of peters off, and then you've got the kind of your couple of traditional landscape shots towards the end, which just really mind you. I think it works really nicely as a sequence, keeps your eye, and I don't feel it being repetitive at all. And it's really nice. I love kind of like the journey book, shall we say. A1's a great example, as is Francis Scott's A9, which is obviously well-known road in Scotland, and it's lovely, particularly when you've driven parts of it or driven all of these roads, to kind of actually take you back to maybe childhood memories or particular memories, as you say, from living in the areas.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, I got a message from somebody who'd bought the book recently, and they'd said that they'd shown their pet. Shown his parents the book, and his dad had picked it up and said, A66, why would you have a book of photographs of the A66? What a boring idea. And then he himself had worked along the A66 and started to recognize things in it, and that brought a lot of memories back to him. So yeah, I think I think, people will recognize it who've driven along the A66, but I think it also represents that sort of difference, that real difference in landscape across it. If you take any route across England, you probably come across this in different ways. I think what was interesting about the A66 in that way is it didn't sort of flit from rural to heavy urban. To rural, to heaven, there was a sort of
Gradual.
a definite, this is this end and this is this end. And it kind of, if it was on a graph of how built up it was, it would gradually slope down, kind of thing.
Yeah, I was going to ask, from undertaking this project, is there anything interesting or unique or unusual or something that maybe surprised you about the journey that you the road that you maybe hadn't thought about or considered beforehand?
I think the most surprising thing was that Workington, which when I first arrived there, felt like exactly the sort of town that I would be able to find a lot in. I really felt like I struggled in Workington.
All right, yep.
Not sure why that is. As for finding things out, I don't know really, and I think possibly that's because I've known the route since I was a child, going across the lakes. That
Yep.
it was all
It's not,
familiar to
yeah,
me.
it's not really a new exploration. It's really documenting it from your perspective, as opposed to saying, right, I'm now going to go and photograph this particular route. And I suppose there's then the exploration and having to build up the knowledge of that route, which in this instance you already had.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did. I did know the road. Like I said, I've been traveling across it on and off for 50 years, really. So
Yeah.
there was nothing particularly sort of stands out as being something that took me by surprise, really.
And at what stage of photographing it and kind of pulling it together as a project did you decide to take it and present it as a in a book format?
I think once I decided to definitely photograph the whole road, I decided I wanted it to be a book because I saw that potential for what you called the journey book earlier. That seemed to me the most logical way to present the work and to present it geographically as well. So I think once I decided in my head I was going to kind of do some kind of response to the Paul Graham book, I think pretty quickly I thought that this needs to be a book as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, really nice. And how sequencing? Obviously, you took that upon yourself. Did you seek feedback from anyone, or did you just go with your gut instinct and then send it off to the printers?
Yeah, I went this time. I went with gut instinct.
Yep.
I was going to get, as a guy I know who runs the Modernist Society in Manchester, who
Okay.
published a couple of things for me before, and Eddie had offered to sort of look through it and sequence it. Like I say, the bulk of the sequencing was done just by the very nature of where places appeared on the map, really.
Yeah.
And then it was a case of just playing around with it, going back to it, stepping away from it, going back to it, stepping away from it,
Yeah.
until it felt that I'd got it
Right.
right, really,
Yeah.
for this one.
It's one of these things, I think, when it's your own work in particular, you can spend days, weeks, hours, months procrastinating over in just the simple of images. And I suppose it works well in terms of you've got a general structure in which to slot things into. And then it's just making really, I suppose, kind of really making sure it's the balance of subject matters, balance of images, and everything like that that comes together, which I think it's lovely, and it's a really nice body of work. And I suspect, do you think you'll continue and maybe do more work or more projects of this sort of nature?
I think, well, yeah, I think so. If I just quickly go back to the sequencing, what
Yeah,
I would
sure.
say is when you said about asking other people to look at it, I think the fact that I had that geographical structure made a massive difference because, generally speaking, I find it really, really difficult to edit and sequence my own work. I just find myself going round and round in circles. So, generally speaking, I'm happy to pass it over to somebody else and then sort of do it in dialogue with them.
Yeah.
I did a field note zine
Oh yes.
recently, and Ian sequenced that almost entirely on his own, which I was happy for him to do. I gave him a body of work and was happy for him to select which he felt worked strongest and put it together. And then we had just a couple of minor tweaks, and then that was published. But with this, I felt like I had enough of a structure to be able to not sort of torment myself with putting things in and out too much, or ending up with an 800-page book because I couldn't leave anything out. And so that was quite different. As for sort of projects like this, I spent a lot of time recently on the Tyne and William Metro, Shooting Out of the Window.
Oh, cool.
Following the that would be, that's something else that I'm thinking of producing a zine for. Yep. That won't be geographical because the nature of the images are very different. I've deliberately kind of focused on the dirt on the windows and rain on the windows, and so that would be that. Well, that's going to be one that's going to be difficult to edit and sequence because I'll be looking for help for that.
Yep.
I've also I'm just about to start a project looking at sort of the fishing industry along the east coast as far as Aberdeen. That's for an exhibition in Aberdeen next summer.
That'll be nice.
But it's kind of documenting the interface really between land and sea. So it's not so much the fishing industry to document it as an industry. It's more to document it in terms of kind of, I don't know, how the landscape looks at those points where the fishing industry meets the land, kind of thing.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I'm not looking to document the life of a fisherman or anything like that.
Yeah. So it sounds like you've got a couple of really interesting projects coming up, and as you say, sometimes it's easier to sequence your work, other times it can be quite taxing, but and it's quite nice to be able to hand it over to someone else and see exactly what they come up with, particularly when they don't include your favorite images. But at least in this instance, you were able to include all your favorite images when you've got total control over it. But as you say, having kind of a bit of a structure to it kind of helps with that aspect, as opposed to starting from scratch, at which point you think, right, okay, which image do I really select as the first one, and how does the order work, and how does the narrative work? Whereas your kind of narrative is set out for you on the A66, which I think always kind of makes it a bit clearer in terms of the journey and the path you're trying to go on.
Yeah.
And print wise, I think it's really nice. It's a lovely size as well. Feels really nice. As you say, you could end up with an 800-page book if you want to, but I think there's as much of a challenge of making sure you kind of retain the right number of images so it doesn't feel as it drags on and becomes quite repetitive. And I, for me personally, I think it's a lovely size and a lovely format as well. And yeah, as I say, it reminds me a lot of I love the books another place press do, kind of like the landscape, but with a bit of a documentary feel to it as well, in terms of that, which is not something I shoot myself, but something that I actually really enjoy looking at. And it doesn't generally make me want to shoot the stuff, but hey, at the same time, I love journeys and reminiscing about kind of my own experiences on said places. So yeah, a really nice body of work. And I'm always interested to know kind of the books that my guests like to peruse themselves. So it'd be great if you could maybe share four or five books from your own bookshelf.
Yeah, well, the first two I'm going to count as one choice because they're a pair of books that kind of work as one volume, which are two Saul Leiter books.
Oh, yep.
All about Saul Leiter and Forever Saul Leiter. I just think his work is really, really beautiful. The colour work in particular is stunning. I know some of that is because I think colour in middle of the 20th century was different, used differently to how it's used today, much richer tones, I think. But what I particularly like about Saul Leiter's work is the sort of dreaminess of it, the way he shoots through windows, into mirrors, through foul weather. So you get a lot, it's quite blurry, grainy. There's a fuzziness to them, but there's a real warmth to them through the colour. And so these books to me are a real sort of reference point. Going back to that Metro project that I've done recently, you know, they're much more abstract photographs. And definitely these Saul Leiter books have been a bit of sort of touchstone for me there.
It's always nice when you get books that connect with you or kind of give you ideas and stuff like that as well, that can kind of help and kind of give a bit of steer and guidance on your own work as well.
I mean, you know, I'm not in any way. I'm not, well, I'm influenced by him without trying to shoot like him, but I don't think anybody can shoot like Saul Leiter anyway.
Yeah.
I think
yeah,
complete one off. So that those two books I would count as one.
Lovely.
One choice. My next choice is a photographer called Lorena Lohr. Lohr, L-O-H-R. Don't know whether you know her work. I first came across her work in a zine, a rough trade zine called Blue Springs. And then I've then since then, a lot of that work, maybe even all of that work, has been put into a larger volume called Tonight Lounge. And I just, this her work has a kind of, you know, you can see that she is probably influenced by Stephen Shaw, William Eggleston, photographers like that.
Cool.
She has, you know, again, really strong use of colour, which I really like. She also has a, so a lot of these are sort of images that had I been there, I would have taken an image, but she very much sort of frames things, and her composition is really different to how I would have done it, which kind of I think is really helpful to look at as well. But it really, really makes it resonate with me. They're really strong, sometimes slightly unsettling compositions.
Yes.
And yeah, so it's kind of nice to see somebody working in it. Again, a lot of this work is in America, so it looks different to the landscapes I shoot.
Yep.
But her approach to similar subject matter is very different to me, because I'm very much like, I try and get things in order and straight on and vertical lines. And she is much more
off-piste.
Yeah. And it, like I say, it kind of makes me twitch a bit because it's all wonky, but twitch in a good way. And sort of maybe encourage me to loosen up a bit. But it's really strong work, really beautiful work. And definitely sort of has that feel of that kind of photographer, like William Eggleston, Stephen Shaw.
As you say, it makes you twitch, but even if it doesn't, even if you don't go and try to move your own style as much, it will always be in the back of your mind when you're out shooting something. So it might be you just take the shot perfectly straight on, everything in the right order, then you maybe just think, I'll try one slightly different just to see how it happens. So yeah, it's interesting, very interesting.
It is there in my head sort of when I'm out shooting. And it is quite interesting to look at somebody to see how they would have approached
it,
very similar subject matter to me. So that's Lorena Lohr. My next choice is a book called An Attic Full of Trains, which is by an Italian photographer, Alberto Di Leonardo. Right. The book's actually been put together by his granddaughter after he died.
All right, nice.
So these are, a lot of these pictures are holiday snaps, very sort of banal, vernacular stuff. But what really appeals to me about these pictures is the feel of them. There's just, I don't know, real warmth in them. You can kind of tell, you can really feel the photographers that he's sort of loved taking these pictures. That comes across really strongly, I think.
Strong connections.
Yeah, they're very, I mean, they're much more like heavily saturated than I would produce myself, a lot more sort of shades. And I don't know whether that's because of the camera he was using at the time, or whether that was a deliberate choice, or whether that's something to do also with the paper it's printed on, because printed on almost like sketchbook paper.
All right, like very matte feel.
Very, very matte, yeah. But then again, there's that sort of, going back to Saul Leiter, there's that kind of dreaminess to it, I think. And a sort of wooziness to lots of the pictures. Really, really beautiful. And I kind of like as well the fact that his granddaughter has found these pictures
Done something with them.
done something with them, done something so beautiful. It's such a beautiful book to hold and to spend time with. Really, really lovely. It's we're kind of like finding a box full of somebody else's pictures in a junk shop, which I have done myself.
Yes,
been fortunate enough to do, and it's, I don't know, you're kind of spending time with other people's memories here, really.
Yeah,
I think rather than a photographer going about his work, it's a much more personal, like I say, often family photographs, I think, but
yeah,
really gorgeous stuff.
Lovely.
And then my next choice is Fred Herzog, Modern Colour. I don't know. Do you know Fred Herzog? You will know Fred Herzog.
I know of, don't know the book.
Well, again, it's got a sort of Stephen Shaw, William Eggleston. I think Stephen Shaw, William Eggleston are like, and Saul Leiter are the big three for me personally, kind of thing. These are shot in Vancouver, mostly in the 60s and 70s, I think, late 50s as well, and just great color images, and so many of them kind of just suggest story. They suggest that there's something really interesting going on. The characters that he finds in his wandering around the streets. You can spend a long time looking at these pictures and inventing narratives. I used to be a teacher, primary teacher.
Cool.
And I used to sometimes use Fred Herzog pictures to get kids to start sort of thinking of stories. And they responded really well to it. They would come up with loads of questions about these pictures and they're probably not the normal kind of pictures they would come across at their age and these days.
Yeah, something different that they can engage with.
Yeah, yeah. And it contains as well, I think, my favourite ever photograph, which, annoyingly, I haven't marked in the book, so I could go to it. But it's a picture of a window, and there's a curtain which is drawn, but it's pulled slightly back, and there's a man's arm resting on an armchair.
Ah, lovely.
And it just, for me, it does everything that you would want a photograph to do. It's just as close to the perfect photograph as I can imagine. I was now stumbling with my speech because I'm trying to find it. I can't find it. But it's a great picture. It's just, it could. His pictures all belong on the fronts of novels, really. And
lovely.
I think you could easily sort of, just so much mystery involved in the people in them. And so it's like so suggestive of story.
Very nice.
Again, another great book to spend time with.
Brilliant.
And then my last choice, I can just do one more.
Absolutely.
It's also, I'm going to cheat a bit here because it's not a photography book, it's a book of paintings.
Oh, cool.
George Shaw's The Sly and Unseen Deer. And I don't know. Do you know that book? Do you know George Shaw's work?
Don't know. Nope.
Right, well, George Shaw's a huge influence on me, and I think a bit of my uptightness about line and things being flat and straight on comes from George Shaw. He paints the most beautiful paintings, and they're with, is it Humbrol, the model?
Tiny little pots of paint.
Yeah, so he paints with those, and it's all photographs of the Tile Hill Estate in Coventry, where he grew up.
Cool.
He just goes back and takes photographs and then
goes back and paints it.
This work was nominated for a Turner Prize, I think.
Nice.
And I think, I don't know, I mean, they're just lovely paintings, but I think these have been a real influence on my sort of style and my eye, the way he frames work.
Yeah, the way he frames it and the way he paints his work is kind of like fed into how you maybe view your own work through the lens.
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
By the time I came across him, I'd already started, taking photographs again. But I think when I saw this, it was like a confirmation that I was going about things in the right way for me to
Yeah, that's it.
to
And
the
at the
rifle.
end of the day, I always say everyone has to shoot the style that they like and shoot the way that you enjoy shooting. And it's such photography, such a personal approach. What the way one person likes a particular image, you can guarantee someone will see something totally different in it, or see something they don't like, or see something they do like. If you pass someone a sequence of five images, everyone will find something that what works, doesn't work, etc. Because it's so subjective, and that's part of what's enjoyable about it, and it's part of what's enjoyable about books as well, is the fact that it's a physical product of of your work. You don't need to sit and flick through it on screen. You can actually kind of take time to enjoy and work your way through a sequence of work that someone has spent time putting in that order, putting that in order for particular reasons as well.
Yeah, I think, you can just learn so much from looking at
Yeah.
other people's works, both as individual images and as bodies of work as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally
Yeah.
agree.
And you can learn a lot of about how to see, I think pretty much everything I've learned about how to sequence, and I've got a long way to go with that, but it's come from looking at other books and realizing that, sometimes an image, which when you take it and when you get it home and you look at it and you think, there's nothing special there, nothing going on there really. But then all of a sudden, when you start to put together a body of work, sometimes it's not what you think would be the big hitters that end up being in there. It's that these contextual pictures that are needed to sort of push the narrative along, really.
Absolutely, and likewise, the big hitters don't make it because they perhaps detract from the rest of the body of work, or they stand out too much, or they don't contribute to the story in the same way as they do as an individual shot. Which is always rare. And I think when you begin to think about sequencing and projects in that way, I think your kind of approach to shooting your own work does change a bit, because it's not necessarily just about one-off shots. It's about, right, what am I actually, what's the story that I'm telling you? How do these images that I'm photographing today work with other images, etc., that I can kind of build up a bigger story, a bigger narrative, if that's the sort of thing that you're trying to progress and proceed with.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, almost everything I've learned about sequencing and how to put together a body of work and what belongs in that body of work and what doesn't has come from photo books. So I have to give my partner a shout here as well, though. She's a painter and she's got a much sharper eye than I have for what belongs together on two images.
That's it. But the fact that you've got someone who you can bounce ideas off with as well, I think, is always invaluable, because it's how we kind of all push ourselves to kind of tweak things. And I think every time you put a sequence together, you always learn something from it that allows you to you kind of take that forward into the next project that you're working with, or the next iteration of that sequence of images as well, as you come back to it days later and think that image doesn't quite sit there.
Yeah, I think that's another important thing, isn't it, that I've learned, that you don't just do it and then send it off. It has to sit in your own head, and it has to sit as a body for you to come back to and until you get there.
Excellent. Well, on that note, Eugene, I would just like to thank you so much for your time this evening. It's really been a pleasure chatting to you about your work and the A66, and just for giving me some of your time this evening. So thank you very much.
You're very welcome. I've really enjoyed the chance to talk to you.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank
Cheers.
you.